Looking forward to having him. But tonight, I want to just spend some time talking about our kids, what they're going to be hitting in culture, sex, and also their identity and sexuality. So first of all, when we talk about our kids and all that process of talking to them and defining things and having awkward looks and conversations, we have to kind of have a goal for all of that. And I want to tell you, first of all, what shouldn't be your goal. And then we're going to get to what your goal, in fact, should be. But your goal is to not simply have, it's not simply to have your kids not have sex until married. This is kind of the sex is bad or gross method. You kind of tell them all the reasons and make it sound so horrible and condemning if they ever thought about something like that. And these conversations kind of typically will start out when kids are young, and you say something that similar to that is totally inappropriate unless you're married. You know, only misbehaving girls or boys would ever think or do something like that. We'd be so disappointed if you ever did something like that. Do you know what kind of girls or boys do those things, think those things, say those things? And so that's the sex is bad method, the sex is gross method, which isn't very advisable. And it really doesn't actually... I was reading in one of the books that I had read to prepare for this. The author, who's a psychologist, was talking about a young woman who did save her virginity for marriage, but was so overwhelmed with just the inability to process what had gone on her wedding night that, in fact, it was actually not a win for her in that idea. Now, of course, we want all of our children to be virgins when they get married. That's the optimal thing. But that's not the end goal of teaching about sexuality and sex to our kids. The goal isn't to scare them about possible consequences. This is the sex is scary method, or sex is going to have horrible consequences for you. And you talk about unwanted pregnancies and STDs and bad habits and cycles and broken hearts and stuff like that. And you try to make them be scared of those consequences so they remain celibate or remain a virgin until they get married. And the sex is scary method often doesn't work that well either. It's also not the goal with our kids and discipling our kids. The goal is also not just as long as they don't actually have sexual intercourse, we're good. They technically didn't have sex. This is called Bill Clinton method. No, just kidding. I've heard parents even say, that was horrible. I've heard parents say, well, anything above the waist is okay. Kids are going to fool around. They're just, whatever. That's not going to work out too well either, and that should not be the goal of our conversations and our relationships with our kids, especially in the world of sexuality. Let me present to you what I think a goal is for our kids in sexuality, and it's obviously there's lots of people's opinions, and I feel like the scripture speaks to this, but let me present this to you. I think that the goal of our children is to understand God's heart and intentions about sex and sexuality and to experience the fullness of God's plan for them in that area. I think the goal should be so much further than, just waste up, buddy, okay? Or just be a virgin when you get married. If you're a virgin when you're married, you've been a good Christian. And that's really a short-sighted vision and can really kind of skew up some things and make them even approach it in a legalistic manner. We want our kids to be able to think correctly and make their own good decisions because they have the larger context, not just a bunch of no's. And this is kind of weird to say, and just track with me, but we want our kids to someday have good sex lives, right? Think of all that goes into your sex life as a married couple. Think of all that the things that God has designed your sex life as a married couple to be. And all the things that it takes to do that. There's monogamy, faithfulness, freedom, pleasure, trust, romance, sacrifice. All those things go into a vibrant sex life with a married couple. Taking out the garbage, painting a room, those are all parts of good sex life, right? But here's the thing, is that when we start to talk to our kids and disciple our kids about sex and sexuality, all of a sudden, we boil it down to a bunch of no's and let somebody else fill in the rest of the conversation. So how do we actually have a larger context and disciple our kids in this? According to a woman named Dr. Julie Slattery, and I'm going to mention her a few times, and we'll give you some resources both this time and next time. But in her book, Rethinking Sexuality, the way that we train our kids and help them get to the point where someday they can be a loving wife or a loving husband that actually understands and thinks about sex the right way because they have God's heart is to disciple our children in this realm of their development from an early age. And although most of us would understand that we're supposed to disciple our kids, when it comes to sexuality, we often don't. And the statistics prove that out over and over and over again. Many Christian parents leave out the area of sex and sexuality up to others. Friends of the kids, media, experiences that the kids may have, youth workers, whatever it might be, people in the church. If you are going to disciple our children in 2018 in regards to sex and sexuality, there are a few contextual and cultural things that we need to be aware of. And I think it will help to consider these things when you think about discipling your child in this area. And many of the ideas I present in this specific portion are coming from a message from Sam Alberry at a Gospel Coalition conference earlier this year. But Sam talked about four cultural shifts. And so I'm going to present them to you. I think they're really helpful because this is a process. It's not just a talk. It's not just a one-time, hey, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina. Okay, we talked about it. Moving on and never bring up sexuality again or sex. That is not going to work well for your kids, especially in this environment. Some of you guys remember that movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger, maybe Kindergarten Cop. Yes, that's what it was. So here's four cultural shifts that are going on right now that I think that as parents we need to be aware of. First of all, moral intuitions have changed, okay? Moral intuitions have changed. Morals come by intuition more than reasoning, typically. We come by our morals by intuiting them more than by actually thinking about them, reasoning out, and deciding what we're going to feel about something morally. There, and when I say intuit or by intuiting these morals, I mean to understand or work out by instinct. Your morals, typically, you're arriving to those things by instinct based on what you've been taught, what your experiences are, what your core values are. When you come up to a moral dilemma or a moral situation, often you instinctually are going to know and rely upon what you've learned, what you've studied, and for us as Christians, what we've studied in the Word and those kind of things. But you see, in our culture, the moral taste buds are changing. Nowadays, morality is defined by what's not harmful. Is that harmful to you? Or is that helpful? Not, is it true or false? Now, often in the older generations, morality was defined by, is this true or is it false? And I can base my moral decisions on, is this true or is this false? But nowadays, the questions are, is this helpful or harmful? Or is this freeing or oppressive? If this is freeing, then that's going to be moral for me. If it's oppressive, that's going to be immoral or amoral for me. Fair or discriminatory? Not right or wrong. Think about same-sex marriage and people who are growing up in this generation and below. They intuit or they instinctively think that same-sex marriage is morally okay. And why would it not be? These two people genuinely care for each other, genuinely want to be a part of each other's life in this way. Isn't that fair? Or does that discriminate against them? And so their moral compass is it discriminatory or fair? It's not. Is this right or wrong? And so as we see these things changing, these moral intuitions of generations that are coming below us, and even ours, for that matter, for sure, they don't have some of the moral intuitions that we think they do or should. And it's dangerous for us to try to appeal to moral intuitions that don't exist. When you're raising your kids and you're thinking that Johnny and Sally are just going to intuit certain things and the culture is going to help reinforce those things, you are going to be sadly mistaken. And you're going to be banking on something that doesn't work. Because right now, the big moral push is this oppressive? Or is it freeing? If I can come up to a situation, same sex, transgender, multiple partners, living with somebody before we're married, and I go, and the person that's deciding this goes, is this leading to my freedom or does it feel oppressive, what you're telling me? If it feels oppressive, they're saying that's bad. It doesn't even matter morally what that is as we would know it. Their moral construct is it free or is it oppressive? And we see this like unfolding in our culture right now. The second cultural shift is our views regarding minorities. Our views regarding minorities. And bear with me through this because I think it sets up an important just construct for us to understand how to talk to our kids. Privilege is reserved more nowadays for those who have minority views or are a minority. One's voice is more important if they are of a minority or have suffered, past or otherwise, more than another person. The more intersections of a minority status, the more valued that voice is. And this isn't something new or controversial. If you would go onto any major campus or in any major news outlet and you would be a transgender African-American woman, they're going to instantly have more cred right now than if it was a white male who is a conservative. Minority voices, and I'm not just speaking about race, and actually I'm speaking about even more ideological minorities and sexual minorities. Our culture values the voice of people with gender dysphoria or same-sex attracted people, and it tends to give a podium for their influence and sway, as well as apparently their being right. If you went to MTV right now and said, hey, we would like to introduce John Nelson. He wants to talk a little bit about sex and just the appropriate relationships about sex. And then somebody else who either is like, you know, a sexual minority, who do you think is going to be invited on the show? Who is going to be listened to? Who's going to have more Instagram followers or positive Instagram followers? Maybe I should clarify. It's a no-brainer. And so that's a big cultural shift. Number three, cultural shift, views of sex and marriage. Sex is primarily for recreation and pleasure. That's the cultural shift. So nowadays, if it gives you pleasure, it's okay. That's the paradigm in which they make the decision. It isn't, is it appropriate, moral, God-given? And those things, and if you go into this culture and you're raising kids in this culture and you're training them up to and discipling sexually and about their sex, and you're thinking that in essence, our moral construct is saying that sex isn't primarily for pleasure, you're going to be in trouble. And if you don't actually address sexual pleasure with your kids, you're going to be in trouble. It can't just fall in the category of don't do it until your marriage. It's bad. Because the culture is saying sex is for pleasure. Think about how fun this would be. Think about how invigorating this would be. And guess what? It resounds with humans because sex is pleasurable, but it's not the primary determining factor of whether it's right. But the views of sex and marriage are shifting. Sex is primarily recreational and to be for pleasure, and so even married couples have not the same moral compass. Fidelity isn't that strong of a compass as it used to be. Also, regarding marriage, It's not so much a covenant now as it is a contract. If you do this, I will do this. If you make me feel this way, I will stick with you and stick around. It's based on romantic feelings. It's based on meeting expectations. If I'm not in love with you, then we get divorced. And that's 50 years ago. That was like, you stuck it out. I mean, you didn't want to be part of a broken family. But that's, our culture is shifting, and we need to be aware of that. And you think about some of the vows that couples, even Christian couples, have nowadays. Sam Alberry said that he won't even marry a couple, and he was dead serious, if they come with their own vows, because it actually misses the whole point of the ceremony. I love you so much, and you are the dream of my life come true, and blah, blah, blah. And he's saying, we know how you feel. We don't need some bad poetry to tell us that you love each other. Because they think that this is all this romantic feeling, not a through thick and thin, through sickness and in death, blah, 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 right? It's, you can even hear it in the vows that they have. The fourth cultural shift, Sam said, was anthropology has changed. The real you is the you that you feel yourself to be down deep inside, and you need to discover who you are. No one can tell you who that is. If anybody tries to tell you who that is, they're wrong, because only you know who you are. What matters most is who I feel and I think I am, and being true to who I feel and think I am. Bodies cannot tell us who I am. Genes cannot tell us who we are. The Bible surely cannot tell us who we are. Only our self-discovery can teach us. And so we dig down into our feelings and we go, how do I feel right now? What do I feel like right now? And that's how I'm going to express myself. Jesus never talked about self-identity. He talked about self-denial. And in this cultural shift of saying, I need to find out who I am and discover who I am, and only I know who I am. And if I tell you that I'm a woman, then you need to accept that, because that's who I've discovered myself to be. Guys, that is what's happening in our culture right now. And if you want to disciple your child through this, you need to understand that that's what is going to be fed to them night and day, commercial after commercial, show after show, movie after movie, website after website, friend conversation that you're not going to be around for after friend conversation that you're not going to be around for. And will they be ready? Will they be ready for these things? In this new area, those who don't agree with those things seem unfair, or they're seen as unfair, unloving, and dangerous. Not old-fashioned and quaint. Our views are one of the main things wrong with the world today. And if you're not a part of the public conversation, then you might not, you might be thinking I'm a little bit overboard. But if you listen to any kind of public conversation, those who are bigoted and self-righteous and old views, patriarchal views, biblical views are the problem. Even in the most recent, and I'm not going to get into the politics of it because it's a very nuanced and complex thing, but even in the conversations of the recent Supreme Court justice, if you didn't agree with certain things, it was like there's going to be hell to pay for that. So within that, how are we to disciple our kids? Well, I think part of that is we think of the ways that Jesus discipled his disciples. Look at his example. Among other things, Jesus was quick to tell them who was their real enemy and who, by virtue of that, was God's enemy. The Art of War, I don't know if anybody's read that here, famous little book. He says, know your enemy. One of the most famous philosophical books on war. One of the most important things is to know your enemy. We need to prepare our kids to understand who and what they are up against in this culture that's shifting. So that was that the culture shift is that's shifting. It just is. It is what it is. And so in that culture shift, we need to know what who and what we're up against. And so the three main enemies that a Christian has and shares these with God is Satan, of flesh, which is you and me, and the world, which millennials and 40 and below, typically we'll just call that culture, right? So all the systems that work together to accomplish Satan's goals and find themselves juxtaposed against God's will. Satan's tools are deceit and deception. Think about this in the sexual realm. How is it that girl after girl gives herself away in ways that when they look back on it, they'll regret for the rest of their life if God doesn't take that away? How is it they get tricked and deceived into thinking that, that it's going to be fun, that it's going to be good, that it's going to be special, that it's going to last forever? Well, Satan's main tool is deception. It's deceit. Think of any sexual act or philosophy right now that finds itself against God's will. The reason why people will engage in that is because they think it's going to give them happiness. They think it's going to bring joy. And they've been deceived by Satan to engage in that only to find out, perhaps sometimes too late, that it was all a big lie. That God's plan was actually better. It wasn't just boring. Now, so that's Satan's tool, is deception and deceit. And your kids are going to be up against that. Then there's our flesh. Just us, you and me. You have the same thing as going on as your kid's going to have going on. You know what it's like. It's the desires of the eyes and the desires of the flesh and the pride of life. Those are tools that your flesh is going to get your kids to use in this battle. Also, shame and guilt. These are things that you and your child will use and will kind of have impacted in their life as they go through this. The third enemy is the world or culture. And the culture uses pressure. Hey, I can't believe you don't have a social media account hidden from your parents. That's so crazy. This is how you do that. Hey, look at this. You're so boring. Your parents are so strict. You'll know if your parents are strict if they don't let you come out to this party and have some fun. This is what's going to happen because it happened to us, remember? It wasn't that long ago. And it's going to happen to them. It's this pressure. The world culture uses pressure and FOMO. I love that word. I use it all the time now. Fear of missing out, FOMO, but it also uses seduction. The world seduces people, kids, husbands, wives, with mental, emotional, and philosophical things that are not true. And it seduces them into doing things that are going to hurt them. Husbands looking at pornography, kids thinking something's cool, and they're seduced by something, so they view something or do something or text something or say something. The world and the culture is pressing and seducing people and our children. So that's our enemies. Satan, ourselves, and the world. Their tools are deceit, the desires of the flesh, shame, and pressure and seduction, both mentally, physically, and emotionally. And here's how it interplays. Deceitful ideas planted by Satan that play to disordered desires that are normalized in a sinful society. Gosh, isn't that you tonight, this week? Deceitful ideas, Satan plants deceitful, your life would be better if it was da-da-da-da-da. You'd have more fun if da-da-da-da-da. Things wouldn't be so hard if da-da-da-da-da. Is this really your best? Is this really what you thought your life was going to be like? Da-da-da-da-da. So deceitful ideas that play to disordered desires, you and I and your kids have disordered desires. We're broken. We're sinful. Deceitful ideas play to disordered desires that are normalized in a sinful society. Man, how are they going to make it through? How are we going to make it through? How are you making it through even now? Well, first of all, we want to identify the weapons to defeat our enemies and their tactics and train our kids to use them. And I want to go through these things real quick. And they're applicable to our own lives, but this topic is about your kids. And so there's going to be times where you think, man, I need to do better just so I can train my kid. I need to figure out how those deceitful ideas, and it doesn't have to be sexual, but deceitful ideas are playing to my disordered desires that are normalized in a sinful society. And so that I can do better with my kids in doing this. But here's the weapons that we've been given. And they're the same weapons that Jesus gave to us and gives to us. The first one is love. This is going to be pretty simple. I'm not a psychologist and I'm just a dad, construction guy, loves the word. So I'm going to keep this really simple. You and I are going to be able to apply these things when we walk away tonight. Love. You need to love your children through this time. Your daughters, you need to steal your daughter's heart. Your daughters need to feel safe around you, dads. One of the most pivotal relationships in this discipleship is the father-daughter relationship. More daughters don't know how to respond sexually because their dads didn't love them well. And so I want to tell you today, dads and moms, love your daughters, love your sons. Love them the way that Jesus loves you. Love them with a love that's strong, it's educated, it's intelligent, it's understanding, it's sacrificial. You're not going to do well discipling your kids through this unless they know that you love them. It's just not going to happen. If you're coming down with a bunch of no's and rules and they're like, does dad love me? Does he like really love me? It's not going to work out. Grace. Grace is needed as you disciple your child. Remember that you were a human once. That you're not perfect. You didn't have it nailed down when you were a teen, did you? Neither did I. We still have a sin nature. You still don't have it nailed down, but yet our expectations are that our kids will. Treat them as a human. Just the other night, Sophia, she's our third youngest, she's six. She came up to me and she's like, I crush Jed. I'm like, what do you mean you crush Jed? She's like, I crush him. And I'm like, what do you mean? You're saying this like you mean you have a crush. She's like, yeah, I have a crush on Jed. He told me I do. And I'm like, instantly I'm like, you don't have crushes. You're six. That's not okay. You don't need to be talking about that with Jed. I don't care if he told you that you do or not. Don't talk about crushes with Jed. And that, I mean, that's how I left it, period. End of story. Go to your room. I didn't say go to your room, but that's how I left it. So I came in, I ran into the bathroom. I did what every good husband would do. I ran into the bathroom. I'm like, babe, she just said she had a crush. And Taylor's like, oh, okay. Well, why don't you talk to her and just tell her that those are really special feelings and that they're reserved for when she understands them more? And I'm like, whoa, that is good stuff. And so I came out, and Sophia's like this, because she's looking for my approval desperately. Every daughter is. They're looking for your approval, dads. And so I obviously removed that approval, and so she's dejected. And I'm like, hey, sorry that I talked about it that way. Maybe let's talk about crushes. And I'm thinking, oh. So I talked to her about it, and she's lit up. And so afterwards, I'm not even making this up, for like 4 or 5 days, she's like, hey, Dad, like, thanks for talking about crushes. That was really nice, Dad. And she was like telling me, you know, we worked through it. And she's like, I really, you know, she understood what made me nervous about that. She understood that these are emotions that should be saved when you can understand them more and you can be safe. And I'm like, wow, that really works to talk to your kids and treat them as a human. Don't act like you haven't gone through all of these things that your child is going through. And most of us have young kids, but there's some parents that are gonna hear this Bible study, and eventually you're gonna have teenagers. Don't act like you didn't think the things they're thinking. The goal isn't to make them feel embarrassed or ashamed, excuse me, by what they feel, but to give them tools and boundaries. And gang, listen, homosexual, same-sex attraction stuff, statistics tell us that there's going to be parents in this church that are going to be dealing with that. And actually, I know there are because I counsel some of their kids. How are you going to walk through that? Are you going to do the first attempt that John did with Sophia and just be like, hey, no, we're not going there? Ain't going to work. Because culture is telling them what's fair and non-discriminatory is moral. And right and wrong no longer matter. You're going to have to work through these things with grace. You have to talk through them. The goal, like I said, isn't to make them feel ashamed or embarrassed. It's to give them the tools and the boundaries that God has given them through the word so that they can begin to shape their emotions and desires within a biblical context. Everybody's got to say no to certain desires, don't you? Nod your head yes with me. You have to say no to certain desires. And so you're going to have to train your child by example and by words that they have to say no to certain desires they have. A smaller percentage are going to have to teach their kids how to say no to homosexual or same-sex desires. It's part of our culture now. But most of you are going to have to deal with teaching your kids how to say no to heterosexual desires that are against what the Bible says is appropriate and right. What have you learned about sexuality? How have you dealt with temptations? Pass it along. Share it. It's an exciting moment. And we're going to go into this later. Of course you've made mistakes. So have I. But you know, like JD was singing, that Jesus has set us free, not just from sin, but from shame and guilt. And so you're going to have that opportunity to pass those things along that you're learning. But you need grace to do that. You need to treat them like a human. Talk to them like you would want to be talked to. The third thing, love, grace, truth. Love without truth is going to get your kids nowhere. God's word is the standard for truth, and it's the only standard for a Christian. It's just, that's where we get our truth from, because the truth teller wrote it. In a world of lies, as Richard has said so many times, Jesus is the truth teller. The Word of God is what we use as our litmus test, as our standard, as our everything has got to be set to the Word of God. Psalm 119, 105 says, "Your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path." And if you don't have a teenager yet, you're going to be begging for God to give you wisdom in these moments, in these conversations. You know, I remember my mom, she used to, remember telephones that were like connected to the wall? Well, unbeknownst to me, she would pick up the other end when I was talking to my buddies. And, you know, and I'd be like, "Damn, you been out here, yeah, yeah," and click. And then my mom would walk in and be like, oh, Shannon, huh? Or Ingrid actually was her name. I grew up in Pennsylvania. And I'd be like a deer in the headlights. How does my mom know I kissed Ingrid? And she's like, "So what's, you know?" And I remember once, I grew up in Pennsylvania. It was an interesting situation. But I think one time I even had to sleep outside because my mom heard on a conversation that I had kissed Ingrid. We had whatever. You're going to need help. You're going to need wisdom. You're going to need direction. You're going to need something that's immovable and unshakable and always true, and it's going to be God's word. John 8:31-2 says, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Guess what, Christian? This works for you, and it works for me. And it works for your child. God's truth is going to set them free. God's truth is going to show them how to deal with desires that they know are wrong, but they're pretty strong, and they don't know how to navigate that. Love, grace, truth. The last one has two parts, conversation. Conversation. If we're going to disciple our kids, we have to have conversation. The first part of this is talking. Some parents are afraid of talking. And I'm just telling you, there's a price to pay if you're not going to talk to your kids about sex and sexuality. Let me give you some stats about sex and sexuality. 48% of all high school students in America have had sexual intercourse. That's from the cdc.gov/healthy and the National Center for HIV/AIDS Prevention. 48% of all high school students have had sexual intercourse. By the time they turn 19, 70% of all teens have had oral sex. 2 out of 5 girls have STDs. Have had an STD. 1 of 3 teens agree with a statement, a young couple should not live together unless they are married. 1 of 3 teens agree with that statement. The average age of porn exposure is 11 and going down every single year. More than half of an online support group of porn addicts said they got addicted between 12 and 24. 83% of teens say that moral truth depends on the situation. We have some potentially difficult waters and scenarios that we're going to be going through. We just are. And you think about some of the errors that you may have committed in your life. I know that I have in mine. And I think to myself, how is my kid going to navigate that? I don't want my kid to have to navigate that. Guys, you need to have a conversation about sex and sexuality with your children. When do we start talking about where babies come from? Most of you have younger kids. I know that my kids are younger. When do you talk about that? When do you talk about attraction? When do you talk about dating and modesty, pornography, masturbation? When are you actually going to bring these topics up so that you can lay the foundation, not the world? We just talked about what the world's doing. We talked about how they have a cultural shift, and we talked about how the deceitful ideas are going to play against their disordered desires, and they're going to be normalized by a sinful society. That's what the world's doing. How are we going to talk about those things that they're going to run into and then have a desire for themselves? When do you start talking about that? My answer to that would be sooner than you think. for almost all kids. I'm not going to stand up here today and give you exact things, but I am here to say that it's probably sooner than you think. We've talked to different parents that their kids are 11, maybe even pushing 12, and they still haven't had the talk, and it's like, gang, you should have the talk. Your kids are already thinking about it. They're going to find the information from somewhere. Experts typically say that between 8 and 10 is when you start talking about the details of sexual intercourse. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a trained sex therapist. So you guys need to pray about that, read literature, talk to and counsel with people that you, and that's why we're having these older couples that I really trust to ask them these questions too. But typical Christian experts are saying anywhere between 8 and 10. Our kids' understanding is first and foremost, and this is important for us to hear, because of all the negative kind of things that we say about culture, this is the most amazing thing. Our kids' understanding is first and foremost shaped by us regarding sex and sexuality. Not culture, not their friends, you. You get first dibs. You get first shot at it. Will you participate? How much will you? The world is clamoring to tell our kids what it thinks. It is clamoring in apps and websites and TVs and everything. And you need to start the conversation before it's already had. We must start to build the framework of truth based on the Bible and common sense and natural law, because they're going to get hit, and they're being hit with some of the same messages that you have heard, that you've been hit with, that you are dealing with. Again, deceitful ideas that play into disordered desires that are normalized in a sinful society. You want to be the first to speak to that. I think we have to ask ourselves, how will we talk, not will we talk? We want to keep a healthy conversation going about sex and sexuality. We want to keep it transparent. It's going to be awkward at first, and maybe it'll never not be awkward. We're still working through this ourselves. But we don't want our kids to feel like they have to hide. I'll never forget being at a barber, and I was with Roman. I think he was 4 or 5. And this barber shop always had, like, you know, a bunch of magazines on the table, 50% of which I didn't want Roman seeing. Many of them were like Maxim's, Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, that kind of stuff. And one time I was in the chair and he was sitting near the table, and Maxim is right on the top. And, you know, obviously modesty isn't their greatest gift there at Maxim. And if you don't know, it's a gentleman's magazine. I don't think it's necessarily pornographic, but it's definitely, revealing, immodest, exposing women and stuff like that. So anyway, there's a magazine there, very low-cut shirt, showing cleavage, and Roman's sitting at the table, and I'm watching him. I'm just watching him to see what he's doing at 4 or 5. And he looks at the magazine, and he looks at me. And he looks at the magazine. And I just go like this. I just, no, Roman, you don't need to be doing that. And part of me is like, oh, great, phew. He likes girls. But the other part of me was like, oh, it's already there. It's already there. And so I want to tell you guys that we sat in the truck after our haircuts. We both had a great, nice little haircut. I still do that to this day. We go to a different barbershop. But we still get our haircuts together. But we were driving home. And I said, hey, buddy, did you feel like that was the right thing to look at that magazine? He's like, no. And I said, well, what do you think made you want to look back at? I don't know. You know, well, what do you think about that? I don't know. You know, he didn't want to have full answers. And so we just barely broached. I said, buddy, you're going to see some things that you might want to look at, and you don't know why you really want to look at it, but you think it's kind of wrong too. And that's the time where you really need to listen to God in your life and what you know to be right, okay? Okay, Dad. But that was four. We started talking about it. And you're going to need to be talking to your kids about this so that it's not awkward where at some point when they're 10 or 11 and you're like, "Rah," and then you walk out of the room and it's the last conversation that's ever had. And, you know, if you're handing your daughter off to, down the aisle and you're like, "Honey, we should talk about something. I haven't had this time to talk." It's too late. It's gone. The moment is gone. You need to start now talking about sex and sexuality. Now, depending on their age is what's appropriate, right? Because, again, the world has a doctrine and a dogma that it wants to disciple your kids with, but we get the chance to do it first. The world is going to say, do whatever feels good. Do whatever you think is right. That's the moral context. You get to decide. Every Disney movie is going to tell them that. Every MTV song, every corporate jingle, every reality show is going to tell them just to do what they want to do. And we get the opportunity to start that conversation and to have it. I want to also talk about the fact that in the book Rethinking Sexuality, Dr. Julie Slattery, I mentioned her name a couple times. I think that's a good book to read. She argues in her book that we as Christians must adopt the same kind of mentality and strategies the world has when we're discipling our kids. The world's attempt to disciple our kids is relentless. It's every chance it gets to talk about sex and sexuality, it's discipling them against what we believe. And so she argues in her book that these conversations should be more regular than just the talk. It should be the talks. And also, they need to understand every time you say no, they need to understand the yes. Every time you present a situation where you're telling them no about something, they need to understand what that no is protecting. That you can't, it's not enough just to say, no, this is bad. You need to tell them why, yes, waiting is a good thing. What God has designed for that yes to protect, or the no to protect, whichever way it is in the conversation that you're having. Remember to remind them of what's being protected when you tell them you must do this or no, you should not do that. And again, the discipleship is not just a talk. I know this sounds silly, but for me it was like, oh, I didn't realize that it's the talks, not just a talk. Now there's going to be that moment where you actually discuss what happens between a mommy and a daddy. But some of us, we need to start off with the small stuff. You need to be able to use just life experiences and opportunities as you're walking around in a grocery store to begin to define what a good marriage looks like, a mommy and a daddy. I don't know if you've been asked yet by your kids, but you know, your daughter might say, "Daddy, I want to marry you." Oh, sweetie, I love to hear that. But you know what? Only a boy and a girl that aren't related can marry each other. You see, marriage is just between a one mommy and one daddy. You know what I mean? That could be a conversation when they're four or three. In the book, The Talks by Barrett and Jennifer Johnson, the most common thing they hear from young newlyweds they counsel is that they wish their parents had done a better job at guarding their hearts as teens and preteens. That is the most common thing that they said they hear. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life." As you disciple your child sexually and through the many issues of sex and just relationships, one of the main themes is that you're going to be guarding their heart. Guarding their heart. And some of us in this room are thinking, "Man, I wish my dad did that." Or, "Man, I wish my parents would have done that." And that's okay, because it doesn't mean that you can't do that. But one of the things that this discipleship and this training and these conversations and the talks after that and before that are doing are preparing and helping your child guard their heart. You see, teenagers typically, especially girls, don't just start looking around for someone to have sex with if they've never been in an emotionally charged relationship. It usually starts with falling in love, having a crush on somebody, deep emotional experience that leads to a physical one. And thus, guarding your heart becomes more important and critical early on than just don't have sex, especially girls, again. So what's at stake if we don't lead our kids well in guarding their heart and sex and sexuality? Well, sure, there's the STDs and the unwanted pregnancies and broken hearts, confusion, depression, all those things, yes. But even more, unstable marriages. You have the opportunity to actually sow into your child's marriage now. In 2011, University of Iowa studied the link between teenage sex and divorce rates in women. And this is published in the Journal of Marriage and Family. And the research concluded women who lose their virginity as teens are far more likely to divorce. Now, this doesn't factor in Jesus Christ and Christianity and healing and those kind of things. So again, these aren't statistics to make us feel bad. I know myself, I was not. Praise the Lord, Taylor did, but I did not. And so we're going to read these things and some of these, but what my point isn't to like go, hey, if this didn't happen, things are screwed up. But my point is that you can invest in your child's marriage now. 31% of married women were divorced within 5 years of marriage who had sex with multiple partners as teens. 47 were divorced within 10 years. Western Washington University did a study that found that with just one partner before her spouse, a woman tripled the risk of divorce compared with those who married as virgins. Again, my point for bringing this stuff up is that you get to invest in your child's marriage. Our lives weren't perfect. That's okay. God is dealing with us just as he promised to do with grace, and we're growing and he's healing us, and those things are amazing. But you get to do something with your kids, and it's so important to do that. Literally, their marriages are at stake. Another thing that I want to bring up is that God has given us sex to enjoy and clear guidelines to enjoy it in. And teaching our kids to honor that and honor those components is one of our biggest tasks. We must teach our kids that sex is wonderful. Our kids have to hear that from us, that sex is going to be in its rightful time. And again, this isn't the 7-year-old conversation, right? This is, you guys are going to grow and stuff like that. These are tools for future if you don't have or kids that are old enough to hear that. But we need to teach them and enforce that when it's appropriate, sex is a beautiful thing. It's a gift to be enjoyed. Our kids need someone to tell them that sex is awesome. And they need someone who's willing and able to try and protect them from messing it up or doing it for all the wrong reasons. And that job belongs to us as parents. Dr. Slattery also said, from an early age, God stirs in our children awareness of the opposite sex. There's an obvious shift that begins to take place in girls and then a little later in boys. I've witnessed this shift in each of my children. As parents, our role is not to ignore or suppress the God-given awakening, but to help our children to interpret it and navigate the potential minefield that goes along with it. So you see, emotional awareness and emotional purity is the prerequisite for physical purity. If you cannot and will not control your emotions, attempting to control your physical actions are going to be useless. And the kids need to know that. We can't just tell our kids, no, don't have sex, don't fool around, but still allow them opportunities where they're going to be able to connect emotionally in deep ways because the one leads to the other. So, specifically regarding our talks must include guarding their hearts. Okay? Now, I know this has been a long time since I started the first part, but it was love, grace, truth, conversation, which first starts with talk. We need to talk about it. We need to turn feelings of attraction into teachable moments. We never should label God-given recognition of the opposite sex as bad. Instead, we should turn the affections that are stirring into our kids into conversations. Maybe you would ask, what do you like about them? What types of qualities does that person have that you might look for in a spouse one day? I think there's a lot of people that don't talk about sex, and there's a lot of different reasons. I want to just list a couple of them here for you so that we can understand what the reason why at times we can be convinced we shouldn't talk about it or we keep on putting it off. One of them is nobody modeled this for you. It's going to be awkward. Get over it. Get with your spouse, or maybe you go in front of a mirror and say the words out loud that eventually are going to come up about sex. Intercourse, vagina, penis, breast, erection, oral sex, masturbation, wet dream. Again, I'm saying these things because I want you to know you're going to have to say them with your kids. If you're not going to say them with your kids, somebody else is, and they're going to define those things. You do not want a group of 16-year-olds defining some of those things for your kids. You want to define those things. And again, experts say that using anatomical words is better. You don't want to just use, you got to stop saying we at some point, right? You're going to have, and sometimes people overcorrect, right? They don't want to use any bad, like real words. I love my sister, my younger sister, but they didn't want to ever say fart. And so when we went down there one time to visit, their way of overcompensating was to say, burp with your buns. And I'm like, you think burp with your buns is better than fart? I'm like, and this is my little sister, Jen. But you don't want to, she'll probably listen to this and I'll get a call later. But you don't want to overcompensate by not using right words. You know, if you have a teenager or your daughter's 11 and you need to use real words with them. Use anatomical, correct words. They're going to hear it some. They probably have heard it, but you need to do that. The second reason why we might not talk about it is we're afraid to take away their innocence, right? I might, like, stir up some curiosity. Well, listen, don't prioritize the short-term goal of innocence over the long-term goal of helping them to truly process sex and sexuality. They're gonna find out about this stuff. They're gonna feel things. They're gonna have all those emotions, just like you did. And they're gonna get there. Now, obviously, you don't tell your six-year-old that mommy has an egg in her, and you know they're gonna be like, mom's got an egg in her, and they're gonna be thinking chicken egg, and it's gonna be weird in their mind. But you do what's appropriate and for their age. And kids are all different in their ability. A six-year-old in one family might need a conversation. In my family, there's different capacities for this type of thing. Like, yes, I'm not going to go into detail, but Olivia doesn't have the same wherewithal and social awareness that Sophia does. And so we're going to have conversations with Sophia before we're going to have conversations with Olivia. It just is that reality. The third reason why we don't have a talk is we feel like a hypocrite, got no leg to stand on. I want to encourage you. And the reason why I say that is because sometimes this might not be nailed down in your life. You might be thinking, how can I sexually, how can I be like guiding my kid through this when I'm a mess and I screwed up and I didn't have my dad walking me through this and I've made decisions and I da 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 da. Don't let the enemy win twice. All right? I get it. You're not perfect. Jesus is real. He's forgiven you. He's given you grace. He's asking you to walk in truth and in holiness. But don't be quiet just because you feel like you failed in a certain area. Talk about those things with your sons and with your daughters. You don't want the enemy to win twice. We will be setting our kids up to repeat our actions. And the enemy wants you to feel inadequate or paralyzed. He wants you to remain silent. Don't do it. Now, the asterisk on that is, and I thought this was great input from one of the authors that I read, is that if we're talking about our past and maybe areas that we failed in, Beth Moore wrote this, actually. She said that she makes general references to those areas that she had failed in without going into too much detail. And she summarized in broad terms, focusing on the impact those decisions had and the brokenness she was left with. And she always draws the greatest attention to the redemptive power of Christ. So you're going to share failures. I know that I'm going to. It's not necessarily the details of the failures, but the reality that those failures led to brokenness without Jesus. And that with Jesus, there was redemption and healing and power and joy and fulfillment like his plan always intended. So, don't procrastinate on this, guys. You gotta have it. Don't be afraid to get to the facts. I've written down four things that I think that might be helpful to ask yourself and them as you're thinking about this talk. What are their natural curiosities? Think about your kid. What are their natural curiosities? Maybe you have a little daughter that just loves marriage and relationships and okay. All right, so she might need a little bit more of an input early on about relationships and what's appropriate and what's not. What are questions they're asking? If your kid asks a question and you're unprepared to answer it, don't worry. Find out the answer and get back to them, but don't shut it down. You got to ask yourself, what are they exposed to outside the home? The other a year ago or so, I was in In-N-Out, and there was a gay couple, two males, and they were kissing in In-N-Out. And my son said, "Dad, what's that?" And I said, "Well, they've made a decision that they're gonna have a relationship, and that's not what God wants them to have, and that actually is gonna hurt them in the long run. But we would never say anything bad to them." And we would never treat them differently, but that's just not God's plan for them. And he's like, he's looking around. He's like, "Well, there's a police officer right there. Why doesn't he stop it?" I'm like, that's the first thing that came out. I chuckled about that. But, you know, I use that as an opportunity. What are they exposed to? There was a gay couple that had an adopted child in Starbucks the other day, and Taylor had to have a conversation with Olivia about it. What are they seeing out there? Don't shy away from those conversations. Don't make them feel embarrassed to ask about it. Tell them what's going on. Tell them how it differs from God's plan. Tell them how we love those people and don't reject those people. How we're not going to ever be rude to them or anything like that, but it's just different than God's plan. And this is God's plan, and this is our truth, and this is how we make decisions. This is what God blesses. I think the reality of it is that there's going to be a lot of opportunities in our day and age to have conversations about sex and sexuality. But the construct is love, grace, truth, conversation, especially talk. The second part of conversation is listen. In any conversation, there's two parts, right? Listen. James 1:19 says, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." If you're anything like me, I just get angry when a situation comes up that's scary for me with my kids dealing with something that's like about sexuality, relationships. I don't want to hear the rest of this conversation. You know, I'm just like, I want to shut this down. It's not good. You need to listen to your child. Listen to them talk. And don't rush to conclusions. The other day we were driving, and I like to tell stories about myself because they're always bad. So we're driving the other day, and I tell one of my kids, I don't even remember the deal, but I said to one of my kids, you're crossing the line, you're being too goofy, you know, I don't want you to do that. And so then I hear Sophia go, don't be goofy. And I thought she was saying it to my other daughter, Olivia, who I just had corrected. I said, Olivia, don't be overly goofy. And it's, I'm trying to drive, whatever. And I heard Sophia say, hey, don't be goofy. And I thought, Sophia, why would you say that to Olivia? I corrected her. I don't want her to feel bad about this. And so I was like, Soph, I don't need you being another parent, da 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 da. And she was like, oh, I was talking to Roman because he was, you know, and he was like up in Sophia's face with wide mouth and like getting it, you know, how kids are just in the back. And so I had jumped to a conclusion. And personally for me, that's one of my biggest faults is I constantly jump to conclusions. Now, I use that because you do it too, right? Don't lie. You jump to conclusions, and I'm telling you, in this specific situation, if you jump to conclusions, you're going to shut your kid down, and they're not going to want to talk to you. Listen to your kid. Ask them stuff. Well, why did you do that? What made you feel that way? Do you think that was helpful? Just listen to them talk. If you jump to conclusions or shut them down, especially girls, they're just not going to invest in you. They're not going to feel safe to talk about what they're really going through. So again, closing time. Love, grace, truth, and conversation need to be a part of the way that we disciple our kids through sex and sexuality. I think that there's a lot that you and I are going to come up against. I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's a tool that you guys can use. Please don't just let the world speak into your kids. Please don't just give them the no, wait till marriage talk. It's not gonna work nowadays. There's too much happening and going on. And I wanna close with this. The gospel is powerful. Don't ever forget that. The gospel saved me from being an absolute wreck who did anything and everything they could against God's word to being a man that loves the word, attempts to live a right life before the Lord, has a family, keeps a job. The gospel transformed my life from horrible in a miry pit to somebody with God's grace who's walking out Christianity the best that I can. For those who are Christians here, you know the same. The gospel changed your life. And the gospel can change your kid's life. Yes, we need to disciple our kids sexually and through all the minefields of this, but I want to encourage you that you're not on your own. That as your kid and as you train your kid and you expose your kid to the gospel, and someday, hopefully, they receive Jesus Christ into their life, that's a powerful thing. Jesus Christ will live in them. The Holy Spirit will be their conviction and their conscience. And you'll be partnering with the Lord in the life of your child. The gospel is powerful, and you need to not be afraid of this situation. Because the very same things that God has done in your life, he can do in your child's life and is going to do and maybe even is doing. But without the gospel, none of this biblical stuff makes sense because the whole paradigm has shifted. And without the gospel and your child knowing and loving God, it's only going to be a matter of time before all the other stuff comes. And even when they do have the gospel, even when they know Jesus, there's going to be failures, there's going to be heartaches, but your desire is to see them walk with the Lord through this, not just have those rules. And if they don't have the gospel, if they don't have Christ, they are going to think our rules are absolute craziness. There's a saying, it says, those who don't hear the music think the dance is mad. People that don't have Jesus Christ in their life and haven't used the Bible as their construct for sexuality and sex think we are nuts, that we're prudes, that we're dangerous. And so I want to encourage you to be pointing to Jesus Christ. He's got an opinion about sexuality. He's got an opinion about marriage. He wants to walk with your child through that. You don't have to go along. You don't have to go this alone. And so be bringing Jesus to your child as you go through these conversations, because that will be really ultimately the only thing that keeps him from that. So with that, I'm going to close. I'm going to just close in prayer. We have a few minutes. I encourage you, just take your spouse and pray over your kids. It's not an easy topic. There's going to be all kinds of successes and failures in the next 10 years in our lives and in our kids' lives, I should say. So next month, we have the panel. You get to ask lots of questions. We're going to have fun asking them questions and seeing what their answers are. But don't shy away from the talks. It's important for your kid to have them.